Hello, and welcome to the Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast. This is John Goodwin, your host. This podcast is dedicated to the aspiring writer and artist and will provide inspiration and tips from top professionals in the field. If you've been listening to this podcast or are new to it, I thank you very much. I would also appreciate it if you took a moment to follow on whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts. Writers of the Future is one of the longest-running writing competitions in the world, now celebrating four decades of providing a helping hand as initially conceived by L. Ron Hubbard. I also want to let you know that the Writers of the Future volumes are available in bookstores throughout the U.S., Canada, the U.K., South Africa, and Australia, as well as through all major online retailers. I'm here at Superstars Writing Conference in Colorado Springs, and this is a podcast panel, meaning I am recording this podcast as I interview Sound Booth Theater founder Jeff Hayes and international bestselling author Craig Martell in front of a live audience. Jeff Hayes is a prolific narrator and producer, and Sound Booth Theater is a full-service audio production company that specializes in multicast audiobooks and cinematic audio. Craig Martell is the author of around 190 books. I'm familiar with his Ian Bragg thriller series. He's also one of the geniuses behind the 20 Books to 50K conference created by Michael Enderle. Welcome, Jeff and Craig.
Thanks for having me.
Great to be here, John. Thank you.
So, first of all, Jeff, can you please provide just an overview of your company?
Yeah. Well, I think at this point, the way most people may have heard of Sound Booth Theater is through an audiobook called Dungeon Crawler Carl by Matt Dinneman. That audiobook series has been taking Audible over very, very slowly but surely. But also, you may know me as the narrator of maybe some of your favorite lit RPGs, such as Everybody Loves Large Chests or Life Reset. And also, Sound Booth Theater has developed a reputation of being some of the highest quality audiobooks you can listen to, whether it be on Audible or on our own independent platform that's been around for a little bit more than three years, because not only do we do multicast, we choose only, you know, the best narrators that we can find. And also we do full cast sound effects and music on a lot of our productions, especially the ones that are exclusive to our own platform.
Great, thanks. And then Craig, just an overview of yourself as an author. We took an hour yesterday to do that. Today we'll have a little bit less.
I've been an author for 8 years now and have 190 titles. I have a number of collaborations, and my engagement with audiobooks, I probably have well over 100 books in audio as well, a number that I've had done myself, as well as licensed to Dreamscape, Tantor, and Podium for them to produce and market. Audiobooks or an additional revenue stream, and however you consume your content, whether it's reading it, listening to it, or watching it, it's all the same. It's our story, and we're happy to share it with you. And the full cast audio, that reminds me of the audio from 30s and 40s, the serial productions where they have a
radio
guy
theater,
with a hammer hitting a board for sound effects, and it's incredible.
Good. So now, what I'm going to do is a bit of a different take on this, because we've got the both sides of the audiobook being represented here. So, Jeff, so you alluded to it a little bit, but how have you been building your company catalog?
I suppose it's just been an extension of the career I've already started as an audiobook narrator. You know, when I first started, I got in where I fit in, but I also... the philosophy of production for me is to do such a good job that no matter what the actual text is, whether or not the listener enjoys the story, they're gonna notice that the audio is good and they're gonna search my name. So that was always my strategy from the get-go. And so the more I practiced within this field, the more I was able to get higher and higher profile authors. And one key to my strategy also has been to stick to a royalty share model rather than being paid for the work itself. This is because what I want is accountability. I want to fail if the product fails, and I want to succeed just as much as the author for the specific product that I make with them. And because that is my philosophy, there's also a value add with my name attached to the product. You're going to sell more audiobooks because people know my name, because people know what Sound Booth Theater is. So, you know, just over the years, having made more and better relationships and worked with more and better authors, eventually it led me to, you know, some of the highest earning lit RPG authors out there. And we have stayed faithful to them and made amazing audiobooks with them and put them on Audible and, you know, extended the life of their series by just creating something that everyone recommends to each other as audiobook listeners. So I would say that's it. It's just always making sure the proof is in the pudding, always making sure that listeners aren't just satisfied but wowed by what we do.
And you're, like you said, you focus on Lit RPG.
We focus on Lit RPG because that's what got us into the game. Other Life Dreams was the first Lit RPG audiobook that I narrated, and it was the first audiobook I'd ever narrated that when I saw the first royalty check, my eyes went big.
Good. That's always good to have big eyes.
Yeah, I've had success before, but nothing like what Other Life Dreams showed me that first royalty check. And that's when I absolutely knew I was on the right track with this genre, because there weren't a whole lot of narrators in it.
No, for sure.
At the time, this was like maybe 2016, 2015. It was a brand new genre, maybe been in the Kindle market for a year or two at that point. And I love video games, so it was a natural fit.
Good.
I really liked the content, so I just kept going with it. I got into the Lit RPG community on Facebook and found out who all the best writers were at the time, made deals with them, and just kept building my reputation from there.
Good. Now, Craig, 190 books, 100 audiobooks. Do you ever write for audio?
I have to plead guilty to ignoring my editor, who always bags me on this is going to be hard to narrate. So my editor is looking out for me. I honestly don't think that way. I have to count on other people to do that. And getting input from narrators is helpful, so it's smoother. And that smooth flow, when people read a book, they're narrating it in their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So writing with a narrator in mind is the better way to go. And maybe someday I'll get that right.
So I've had some authors who have, because they like their narrator so much, they start writing their dialogue for that narrator. You know, they're just like, oh, this guy rocks. So I'm gonna write that plays into his voice. And have you found that a lack of that, or a something that if that happened, it would make for a better product from your perspective as an audiobook producer?
Actually, a lot of the authors that I work with, especially if I get in early in their series, they can't help themselves. My voice kind of like sticks in their brain. And they, especially the character voices, that's I hope, a help to them, that I give their characters a specific voice and it can help guide their dialogue as writers. There's authors that I've worked with who specifically had me in mind before they even started writing the book. So, for instance, Harmon Cooper is one of those writers. Monster Hunt NYC is the first example of that, where he actually wrote a Lit RPG about two New York musicians who they lose their musical equipment and they have to play this illegal augmented reality kind of like Pokemon Go game and capture these creatures in order to sell them on the black market so that they can get more gear. And the reason it's illegal is because it's too realistic and people react to the augmented reality creatures in reality sometimes in very dangerous ways. So anyway, it was a musical. It was a musical piece, and he had Me and Annie Ellicott are probably our most prolific and wonderful female narrator at Sound Booth Theater. She's actually a jazz singer. We're both composers. We're both musicians. So we built this entire thing, full cast, sound effects, and music, all from Harmon having this idea and writing it for us. So he even did character design that was kind of similar to what we look like. Another one that's very recent is this new series called Battle Deck Academy that Harmon had me in mind again, but because he wanted special things done with the voices. So yeah, I mean, the closer I work with authors, and because we do royalty share, because our authors know that I will invest myself into a work, that they're willing to go that extra mile and kind of build the story around what I'm capable of.
Got it. Yeah, just the Jonathan Mayberry, who's very popular author in general and has a good presence here at this conference. But last year, Ray Porter, who's his narrator, he was here as well. And Jonathan said he starts writing dialogue to fit Ray Porter because of his voice and how he, you know. So it works really, you can play into it. If you've got yourself an established, you know, line of books that you're doing there with audiobooks. So for yourself, Craig, on how does it work for you on the book versus the audiobook? What do you see the advantages of making all of your books into audiobooks? Because 100, it's not everything, but you're well over 50% on your way now.
I'd like to offer all the products for my books. I write one book, and I'd like to offer it an ebook, paperback, and audiobook simultaneously when it launches, as well as get the German translation and offer that in ebook as well as paperback. So five products off one property, off one piece of intellectual property. The ebooks, as you were talking with Jeff, my Ian Bragg series, Chris Abernathy, my narrator, is one of my proofreaders. So he'll go through and proof it, and on occasion he'll highlight words that, is there a different word you can use, as it doesn't flow as smoothly as it could. And he catches typos. And so I have him listed in the front credits as a proofreader as well as the narrator for the audiobook.
That's good. And I know that, like, audiobooks is up to about 10% of the overall book revenue in the publishing industry and continuing to climb. Now, going back to you, Jeff, with Lit RPG, because that really is its own subgenre. And I listened to The Dungeon Crawler. And so I was listening to that, and it's a unique style compared to other audiobooks, you know, like the regular books. So describe the difference between what yours is versus other audiobooks. I know you've got the multicast and you've got the sound effects, but I do a lot of audiobooks too. In fact, I've got an Audi for the Battlefield Earth audiobook. I don't know if you've listened to that or not. We had 67 actors in there, 150,000 sound effects. And we have the music, we've got the ambience track that we laid in, and then the various sound effects, and then the voice tracks and how to balance it. So how does that work with what you're doing on your audiobooks? Because the sound effects are much, they're different. You know, they're much more impactful on your audiobooks than I've listened to other ones. So describe that, please. What's the theory and the, you know, behind how you do that?
Yeah, so first of all, yeah, Dungeon Crawler Carl, we did the standard audiobooks first. I'm the narrator of the audiobooks that are on Audible. And the thing is, we wouldn't have done what we like to call cinematic version. This one particularly is called the Audio Immersion Tunnel because there are certain other parties that are interested in the IP that didn't like us calling it cinematic audio. But so we had to change that. But we wouldn't have put all that investment into making that new product out of a story we'd already published on Audible if it wasn't doing so well on Audible. Book
right.
One of Dungeon Crawler Carl, I believe, has reached 150,000 copies already.
Really?
On Audible.
That's crazy. That's great.
That's without, you know, not counting any Kindle stuff. And that's crazy, right? But the fact that there's six books, they're all selling each other, and we have that income there, Now we're able to actually put so much more production in and basically do a reboot. Now, people tell us all the time, I've listened to your series 5, 7, 9 times already. And there's 6 books. It's like 80 to 100 finished hours of audiobook, and they're listening to it that many times. Okay, that means if we come out with a new product where they get to start over, but they get a new experience for starting over, and we can charge even more for each book this way on our own platform where we're taking the majority of the royalties, now it's become something viable. The actual audio immersion tunnel, the audio drama version of Dungeon Crawler Carl, cost at least 15 times more to produce than the original audiobook, because we spent so much money and time on sound effects and music. And, you know, we have a cast of at least 20 people on it. We made 8 episodes, 8 separate products for people to follow. We released them, each of those episodes, every 2 weeks. So we kept the product in the minds of our listeners over a longer period of time, more opportunities to advertise the same product. And now it's got a life of its own. People are coming to our independent platform and buying it. We're making way more per copy than we would on Audible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've just basically set up a whole new revenue stream with a whole new medium. And not only is that helping us build our audience for Dungeon Crawler Carl, but it's helping us build the audience for audio drama in general. What we want to do is push forward with production and innovate in the space, and not just be another audio drama producer, but bring in the new stuff, bring in the good digital stuff, bring in great composers, you know, make sure that our actors are doing the best possible by directing them live and getting exactly the performance we want out of them. And now for season 2, we're already planning, like our lead engineer is studying Dolby Atmos so we can do 3D sound for it. So we're trying to establish a more excited audience, a more excited market for audio drama in general.
I get it. Now, one thing I want to point out too, if anybody has any questions for any of us, I've got a microphone set up there so Moon, you can go ahead and ask the question in there. So that way it's recorded into this podcast as well. So Wolf Moon, be sure to say your name. That one.
Hi, I'm Wolf Moon. And Jeff, I guess this question is for you. When I worked for Future SF, while they were still a going concern, Alex Schwartzman was the editor there. I wanted to do multi-voice audio productions, and he said no, I couldn't, because there was something about the rights with multiple voices that, like getting Hollywood options and stuff, you might lose first rights with that. So I'm just curious. I love the idea of multiple voices instead of the narrator, single narrator, trying to make up different voices, because it always sounds a little fake. So to actually get real people doing multiple voices, and I have to admit, on Battlefield Earth, that's one of the most fantastic multi-voice podcasts or narrations on audio I've ever heard. So is there a risk of that? Is that something that an author has to be concerned about with multi-voice audio productions?
I've not encountered that issue, no. But I do know that audio drama and audio book rights are separate. So always take a look at your contract before you sign it. I know that the ACX contract says specifically that if you want to do an exclusive deal with ACX with your audiobook, then it is for the audiobook. It doesn't say any. It will say audio dramatization and audiobook if your contract wants both rights. I know I've seen that in Podium's contracts before. You know, so
sure.
And another question for Craig. Craig, how much of a percentage would you say right now your income is through audiobooks? And the other question I have is, are you through one singular platform like Audible, or are you wide in other platforms like Findaway Voices and things like that?
My income right now is only probably about 5% through audio. I think I make more off paperbacks at present. I am taking one series, Ian Bragg, I'm taking it wide. I've uploaded the first book on YouTube. I contacted Audible, had it pulled down from exclusive 40% to 25% royalties. uploaded it on YouTube. I will upload it direct on BookFunnel, as well as I've already uploaded it through Findaway Voices to Spotify and a number of other distributors, which also include Chirp, which is BookBub's platform for audiobooks. So I'm exploring wide with the Ian Bragg series to see how I can get that more, improve that percentage from 5%. It really needs to be more. As far as Audible, it's easy. If you are new to the program and new to audiobooks, it is so easy. You go through ACX. You can solicit for samples and sample narrators. Put your general price for per finished hour, and people will submit test narrations. And you can listen to them. Oh, I love this voice. I don't, because you can narrow it down when you select. And so it's easy. If you don't know narrators, then where do you start? And ACX gets you past that first hurdle. And you only have to stay exclusive for 90 days if you're not royalty share. If you just pay for it yourself, then 90 days later, you can request to be removed from exclusivity and you can take it wide.
And one last question.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, John. The final question I have is, yesterday I listened to an author show me the pilot program that Amazon is doing to do a lower cost AI voice, and the voice was pretty good, which was scary to me as a voice actor because I've made a fair amount of money in doing voice acting, and to actually hear something that's that good that they can just click and start marketing their stuff immediately was actually very frightening to me. It wasn't human, but it had the inflections with question marks, exclamation marks that you normally don't hear. It wasn't like Stephen Hawking's reading through a reader. You know, this was getting very close, and you can then adjust it to make it sound more human as you work with the parameters in it. So it was freaky to me. I wish that wasn't there, because that makes a very low bar for people to get their audiobooks out there. And I understand why authors like that. It's like, oh, they don't have to pay the $250 per finished hour or $600 if you're getting somebody famous. But it means a whole bunch of people theoretically could be cut, you know, have to lower their prices or cut their prices or go out of business. So I didn't like that. I just wanted to hear what you guys had to say about it. I know, Jeff, that we talked at dinner a little bit about this, but I think it's important for the industry to be watching at least. So go ahead.
Go ahead. You can do it as an audiobook producer.
Yeah. So I don't see anyone going on about how much they loved this AI narrated audiobook they listened to. And it may sound good on the surface. You listen to it for a couple minutes and you're like, wow, that's pretty accurate. But you spend many, many hours listening to this voice, you're going to pick up all the little things, all the formulas that happen. You're going to hear the flaws in it, and you're going to get bored, I promise. A human narrator has a relationship with the text, and that's always going to come through. So, yes, you're right. They've lowered the bar even further for independent products on Audible. For me, as a producer, what this means is that there's even more contrast within the market to make us look better. So I'm honestly not at all, I don't feel threatened at all by AI narration. In fact, instead of using it to make a product that costs nothing, I think AI could be used by good audio producers in order to make a budget stretch further. Instead of taking the budget to zero, you just use AI to do certain things that take up too much time, that are boring, that's not really, you know, like for instance, Walla. You know, you could program an AI to do several voices saying certain things and create crowd noise with it. You know, there's all sorts of different ways that an audio producer could get creative with AI that would simply just allow them to do more in production. So I see it as a tool that's being misused over at Amazon with their audiobook AI narration. I think it's an irresponsible use of it, and I think it's gross. But
otherwise, you don't have an opinion?
Otherwise, I don't care.
Yeah. Craig, do you have an opinion on that?
I did try one of my books. It doesn't sell very well. And so I made a trilogy of it, an omnibus edition, and I turned that into a AI-narrated audiobook through Audible. To date, it hasn't sold a single copy. I don't promote it. I don't push it. I don't market it. It's just out there. I wanted to see if people were looking for specifically AI-narrated books, and I think they are not. I think they're looking for quality products. That to be said, this series was never going to be made into audio because $250 per finished hour on a 23-hour book is, what, $6,900? It's kind of hefty. Kind of hefty for knowing that I'll never get that money back. So I offered an opportunity. Maybe there are people out there who consume enough content that it would have some value to them to be able to listen to these, and also the pricing. One thing that's special with this program is you can select your own price. On Audible, with you pay per finish hour, you don't even get to select your price, which I think is a huge drawback. And also, it was 3 whole hours from when I submitted it until it was approved and available for sale. Well, the QC process for real narrators, let's speed that up and let us choose our own price. So as part of the beta, I've already submitted feedback saying, I want to be able to pick my own price. Especially, I paid for the narrators. I own all of this audio. Where with Amazon, with the AI, they kind of own that audio because they have the software, even though it's a beta program. But if I can pick the price there, why can't I pick the price on an audiobook that I've paid to have produced? And why is it only 40% when I paid for everything? If I can get 70% on an ebook, which is the same servers that supply the audiobook space, why can't I get 70% on that? So these are the questions with my access to Amazon that I ask consistently and respectfully, is how can we get these changes in a positive direction for audio that we have for paperback? So we get 60% royalties on paperbacks. We get 70% on ebooks that are priced in a certain range that they've determined is the optimal range. So why can't we get 60 to 70% on audio as well, especially when we've paid for all the production?
So on, like with anything with Amazon and Audible, it's changing as the competition increases, because for the longest time, Audible was, it wasn't that they were just the biggest gorilla. They were the only gorilla in the world. And so now with other companies, more competition, they're having to be a little more flexible with their rates, you know, the royalties that they're paying to authors and publishers is gradually increasing as the options of taking your business elsewhere and is increased. But going back now to the AI, we had an issue with Writers of the Future, which I had to change in the rules on the use of AI. It's a writing competition and it's an art competition. So we're not interested in someone being able to either game the contest or make it a competition of who's got the best writing prompt skills. So that would make it that your story has to be created by yourself. And actually, I did an interview with Judith Anderley a few weeks ago, and we established that the key concern is the senior creative has got to be a person. You know, if you're going to use something, like you said, to use that for the Wawa and that type of stuff, you are controlling that and saying, this is what I'm doing, but you're the senior creative over your product. You know, with your book, you're the senior creative on that. And to your point there, your question earlier about just like the competition of the AI, there are aspects to a human interpreting a story, because a computer won't be able to interpret it. They're going to read it, and whatever the program's been put in there, this is how you do it. And this is when you have this type of phrasing, you slow down. When you have this punctuation, you go up. You do this punctuation, you go loud. You do this punctuation, you just keep it flat. But a human, and that's what makes, like you're saying, like what you do with your audiobooks, a computer can never do that, because your ability to create and put yourself into that and your love for RPG also communicates in your books, because that's speaking to that audience the way, you know, you are that. And so when you get a good narrator, like what you do, you've got an amazing voice. And you say, okay, well, maybe I could, some computer is going to copy it, and then now they're going to start, you know, this is the, they don't call it the Wolf Moon voice. They call it the Cat Saturn voice. Yeah. So, and so they got that deep, you know, deep baritone that just slow and resonates. And it's a great voice, but to think that you can have a computer just take that and run with that and just do what you do. They're not, because you also have an understanding of what you're reading. And so you can put inflections that only you could do, understanding that story could contribute to that, unless you figure out some type of prompt. When the emotion builds, well, the computer's not going to know that. Yeah.
So when I was listening to this program, what Jeff was saying was true. For a short term, you could put up with, there are unnatural pauses. There's this space in between periods that sounds natural. And there's, if it's always set at the same moment, your mind has a fantastic ability to track patterns. And as patterns add up, that's what becomes annoying. This is a pattern. So what you were saying, Jeff, yeah, I can see over, I didn't listen to a whole audio production. I did tell my friend, you know, after about 10, 15 minutes of this, I'd go crazy. But it was really good in the short term to hear how close it was. And then he goes, well, the way you can fix that is go adjust. I said, oh, so you're going to become your own sound engineer and go through every bit of that, which is what sound engineers do. You have to, I told him, well, this takes this long to go through. If it's a 30-hour audiobook, you got to listen for 30 hours. Then you got to go through every word within that, adjusting and tweaking it so it sounds more human in all the spaces between the periods and stuff. And will writers actually want to do that work? No. So they're going to send out shoddy product, hoping it will sell. And like Craig discovered, well, no, it doesn't sell, because people actually will want to spend time listening to quality product. So it's, the worry is, as AI advances, if people aren't careful, AI keeps getting better, just like medical industry and everything else has been increasing in their knowledge, and it doubles over so many years. So that's my only concern. I'm glad to hear that at this point it's not. And
the job security is in hand right now.
Exactly.
As a voice talent.
Exactly, John. Thanks.
One thing on this podcast I do, and I think a big reason why that's contributed to doing so well, is in addition to the great guests that I've had, is I've got a sound engineer that goes through this afterwards, and he's going to edit it, all the pops, all the hisses, any unnecessary lags, you know, things that would distract, because people don't realize bad audio is a turnoff. You're not aware of it consciously, but subconsciously you hear something that's bad and it's just like, I'm not interested anymore. It just, even if it's a great topic, a great thing, a great speech recorded poorly, you know, someone who's recording with their cell phone of an amazing concert, you know, and they're doing it, I can't listen to more than just like a minute or two, because it's like the sound just totally is a turnoff as compared to where you get it from the straight from the recording. It's a world of difference there. So sound quality is important, but the people factor, the real factor that makes it work, is that. Now, Jeff, on your, just for the sake of the audience who maybe isn't that familiar with it, so you've got ambient noise, you've got sound effects, you've got narration, and you've got music. And I know how it works with the audiobooks that I've done, the stories, but then RPG, it was a different mix. You know, when I was listening to it, I was like, wow, this is so different than what I've got. So I'm really, really curious the difference and how it works with what you're doing on the RPG storylines that you do.
Yeah, I honestly don't think that lit RPG specifically is what allows us to do a different mix that way. In fact, I think that the more we work on cinematic audio, the more and more we're going to make adjustments to the script. Because, as you were saying, there's a mix problem when it comes to having ambience and sound effects and music and the narration. Well, we want those production elements to come through, but we don't want them to just be dressing. It's not just decoration.
Right.
We want to use the sound effects and music as a way to portray the things, the feelings, the environment that the author has intended from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff can replace narration rather than trying to share space with the narration. we can take out more and more narration as we go, as we learn how to tell stories with sound rather than with just speech. So sound effects, ambience, music, we want that to integrate into the experience as a storytelling tool rather than just adding colors and bells and whistles to an audiobook that's already being narrated. That way, even we have even more of an opportunity to differentiate an audiobook from an audio drama so that perhaps both products will be selling very well for those people who just don't care for audio drama but still want to listen to the story as it was originally written. Then we have the audiobook available. If you want a more in-depth experience that, you know, uses more of our resources and just creates a whole new thing, mm-hmm. then you can come to our cinematic. So yeah, as far as mixing is concerned, as far as sharing space there, it's all about how much give is there in the script. How much can we take out to make room for the rest of the soundscape?
I get it. Because that's a different view that I've got. Because when I do the audiobooks, it's unabridged. I used to do the abridged back in the 80s when that was the thing. And then that became unabridged was the only way to do audiobooks. And I do the radio theater style. We do that. But it's all built around the story. But we build the soundscape. We build the everything around enhancing the experience, so it becomes more of a three-dimensional, as you're listening to it. And the only thing it doesn't have is the video track. That's up to you now. So Craig, your experience on working with, as an author then, have you done both the multicast as well as single voice?
I have done no multicast, but that's another unique product, like off Ian Bragg, The Operator. I have it available in audio as a single narrator. A full cast would be yet another product.
Right.
And unique, with a unique ISBN and a unique copyright. It would be a great addition for that program. And I like what Jeff said about integrating the sound effects and the music in a way that then fills what would have been words. So it's a great way to lose yourself within the audio, within the story.
Yeah, because because my first experience with this type of audiobook was graphic audio. But listening to yours has taken it to a new level, at least from when I used to listen to graphic audio. You've taken it to a new level where you said, because graphic audio still has a story and they're building around that, where it seems like you've got your project, the production, and the story is a piece of that production, not the thing everything else is built around. You're built around the story you're communicating, that you're telling, not the written word that other stuff enhances. Your whole production, like you're a true theater that you're creating with what you've got.
Yeah, I think graphic audio's current model is they have created a method for audio drama where they're able to quickly piece it together and send it out. And I suppose there's nothing wrong with that on the surface, but I think the difference between us and them is that we just don't rush to put together a cinematic. If we're going to spend the time and energy to make it cinematic, we don't want it to be clearly patched together. And again, it's like with graphic audio, it's like they have a tapestry going behind the narration and the dialogue that kind of simulates what should be going on. And for us, we don't need to do that. We just do regular audiobooks.
Right.
If we don't want to spend the time and energy to really make it special and amazing and an experience that is less disruptive and distracting and more integrated into the experience, again, using the story, using the music and the sound effects to tell the story, then why not just do an audiobook? It's
right.
So much easier than developing some, some elaborate Factorio system in order to make a more complex and possibly less interesting experience.
Craig?
I have a question for Jeff. I like a simultaneous release of my audiobook, paperback, and ebook. Now, if I wanted a simultaneous release of a cinematic dramatization of the book, what kind of lead time would you need to be able to release that simultaneously?
It depends on what it is, first of all. Like, are we talking about a courtroom drama? We could probably pull that off in 3 months.
Okay.
Right? But are we talking about mill sci-fi?
No.
That's maybe a year.
Like a thriller.
Okay, like a thriller. Maybe 6 months. I don't know. We haven't worked on a typical thriller. We're going to start. There's a series by D.D. Black that's doing incredibly well, and he's looking to work with us. And the thing is, pre-production doesn't start till the summer, but the way pre-production is starting is I'm flying out to his place. His series is actually based in the local area he's in. So I'm going over there with a field recorder to get authentic ambiences from his local area so that I can use those in the cinematic audio. So it really just depends on the scale. What is our budget? How many things are we actually doing? How much time are we spending with the script to edit it, to change things around? We want to change the script in order for it to work with the production rather than trying to staple the production onto the script that's there. So it's still a process that we're developing. I'm gonna guess it's gonna take us about 6 months from pre-production to end of production for us to produce one of D.D. Black's books, and it's shorter. It's like 60,000 words, I think. So that makes it easier. But with Dungeon Crawler Carl, that one took us all year, and this next season is gonna be twice as long, and we're not releasing it till next year, even though we're gonna start working on it in March of this year. So, I mean, I would say not wise to wait on that kind of to do a release that's simultaneous with all those things, unless you just have the time and you're patient and you want to see how it does. Maybe it'd be great. Maybe that's the optimal way to sell cinematic audio. Never tried it before though, so hard to say.
Yeah, so one thing, though, too, is that you have the ability to get a second wind if you do have a delayed release of the cinematic. It's interesting you said that what you're going to do by going out to a ranch. That's what we do with all of our audiobooks that we do. Like, when we had some of our thrillers that took place in New York, we went to New York. We recorded New York taxi cabs. We went down the subway, recorded the subway there. And in the Westerns that we do, because we produce all the Owen Hubbard stories, and the Westerns, you know, when he calls for a carbine versus a six gun versus a Sharps, we have all those sounds. So it's not like a gunshot. No, that's because, again, this is probably more real to you than most, is like the exact sound will trigger that exact image you want to be able to do. So if you have the word and the exact sound, it's so much easier to get the picture you want to be able to evoke in your storytelling, which makes it that much more like what you've experienced now, of like it just keeps on going because it's just that word of mouth. I'm just, wow, that's something about it. It was so good. They maybe don't recognize it, but it doesn't matter if they do, as long as you do. And the fact that you did, that was like, that just raised my bar for you about 500 feet, you know, when you just said that's what you're doing. Because that's true professionalism at that point, when you had that type of concern and over that. So I'm an author. How do I get my story made? What are the steps I have to go through to get a cinematic audio? You've asked it a bit, you know how long it takes, but I'm asking now, what are the steps?
The steps, you got to show us numbers first. You know, we got to have some confidence that there's going to be people buying this thing.
Good.
Now, there's so many factors between us accepting the job and the sales actually happening, but we have to have some kind of confidence that the amount of money that we're going to spend on this thing is at least going to come back to us.
Sure.
Right? I would say that cinematic audio so far hasn't proven to be like super profitable in the short term. It's endearing our brand. to listeners, and it is creating more assets for the IP itself to exploit, take advantage of, use in marketing, and all that. Not only that, but all of our music is specific and crafted to the stories. We do not use royalty-free music except on very, very rare occasions. So think about Game of Thrones. What comes to mind when you think of Game of Thrones? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That just pops into your head as soon as you think of that property. And that's very useful for marketing.
Yeah.
People, you just play that song, and any fans of the story are gonna, their heads are gonna perk up, and then they're gonna have stuff to talk about. You know, they're gonna talk about the different tunes and, you know, the way that they made them feel in this scene or that scene, especially if they'd listened to the audiobook before. So, like, cinematic audio for us is highly experimental, but we're willing to do it if you got some good numbers behind your IP.
Okay, good.
So that's,
and that's all you say, it's all profit sharing, so that they don't have to come in and say, okay, here's $10,000 for you to do my
right, project. Right. And of course, you know, you're going to get a much smaller percentage from us on a cinematic audio for your story because it is so expensive.
Because your cost is so much more.
But, you know, with audiobooks, it's different. We generally will split almost down the middle for most people, and if you do really well, like straight down the middle.
So. Right. So on, Craig, now on audiobooks, what do you see as an author as the future? Because you're a lawyer, you're very good with putting together, you know, packages that are going to revenue, that, you know, make sure you're good in good shape on that. That also can translate for others listening to this podcast, like. What's, you know, it's not so much what's in it for me, but how can I make sure I guarantee my future so I can stay focused on just being a writer, not having to become a waiter in my day job?
Oh, the opportunity. There's never been a better time to be an author because you have access to so many great tools. Like the Superstars Writing Seminar, you can meet people who are doing all of it, people who are niche with, like, you can talk to Jeff Hayes right here in the hallway right now about any of that. What do I need to do? Oh, you got to show me the numbers. Okay, what kind of numbers? And there's your bar. I need to hit 10,000 in sales, 25,000 in sales, whatever that number is before they have the confidence to make this the cinematic dramatization. As an author, you write the absolute best book you can, and then you look at what else you can do with it. Like I said, with ACX and the auditions, you can do that in the course of an hour. If you're smart enough to write a book, you're smart enough to do all of the other stuff it takes to sell that book and sell that book in the channels where the consumers live, whether it's audio, whether it's ebooks, whatever, whether it's ebooks in German, all of that's available to you. Unlike previous years, now you can find it easily online. You can join any kind of author group, and you'll find the information. So nothing is denied you. The barrier to entry is very low. It might take a little money to buy, to pay for an audiobook. But if you can do royalty share, you may win, you may lose with royalty share, or you can just save up your money and then pay for a narrator, and then you own it. And you have confidence in yourself and your story. And you also have, teaches you to look at the numbers. Do you have enough books that this audiobook will pay for itself? And that's what business is all about. And if it doesn't, like the one trilogy that I had an AI audiobook made of it, it was because the numbers didn't support ever making an audiobook out of this thing. So good business. I'll do one for free and you get what you pay for.
Good. And we're into our last 10 minutes here. So that's still, it's open. If anybody else has any questions, feel free to come up and ask them so we can address anything you've got. And also think from the perspective of all those listeners out there, like what would they be wanting to know as well? So you can speak, you can stand in for them. Okay.
Don't want to dominate it, but I do think this is important. When you said 10% of the market right now was the IP of a product, of a book, that seems very low. I think there's huge potential yet on the table for growth. And why I think that is our society is becoming so busy that audiobooks are their answer. I talked to a man last night. He said, I can wash the dishes. I was happy to hear a man washing the dishes and put the kids to bed. And he's able to hear a story as he's doing mundane chores. People are on subways as we're driving, you know, LA, the ride you have to work, at least an hour minimum. Here's an opportunity for people to feed their minds and feed their souls. And this, to me, is just a natural thing authors need to think about with their IP. And it's been at a threshold that's expensive for them, but that's because of the labor-intensive work that's mm-hmm. involved with narrators, voice actors, audio engineers to put this together. So maybe we could speak a little bit about why that expense is there, why it's necessary, because I think people just think, oh, you know, $250 per finished hour, you know, they don't understand. Well, there's a reason for that. So, and Jeff would know that better than anybody.
Sure. You're on, Jeff.
So, yeah, 200, let's look at that number, $250 per finished hour. We're looking at somebody who's at least good enough to basically get the SAG-AFTRA minimum payment. Their number one, their experience is a huge deal. You know, it's not just like an author narrating their own book. You would think that would do well because they know where all the inflections are supposed to be and everything, but it's just not the case most of the time. It's very rare that an author just has the natural ability to speak in a way that is both clear and compelling to listen to. Also, you have to remember that the audiobook is there to promote your work as well as give people an alternate way of consuming it. It has to, especially if you're working in fiction, it has to be something that people are drawn toward listening to just by virtue of the way the performance is going down. Number two, gear. Audiobook narrators, in theory, have the gear they need in order to make sure that your sound quality is at least at a minimally acceptable level. You don't want echoes. You don't want bad mouth sounds. You don't want room tone. You don't want to hear an air conditioner. You don't want to hear their freezer. You don't want to hear the TV of the neighbor. You don't want to hear the traffic outside. And all of these things are tricky to filter out without the right gear. There's that, and then there's the software that the person is using to edit, to listen back and make sure that they got all the words correct. So when we're looking at $250 per finished hour, you're not just looking at, okay, well, they narrated for 10 hours because your book is 10 hours long. That's the least amount of time it takes. If your narrator is absolutely perfect and can go one-to-one, they're going to charge you more than $250 per finished hour, okay? There's the time it takes to narrate it. There's the time it takes to edit it, and often narrators will hire someone else to do those things, so part of their costs are built into their per finished hour rate. I would say a finished hour of audio usually takes 4 to 6 man hours. So really what you're looking at is more like $40 to $50 per hour of work. Then you're looking at, okay, all the gear wears down, right? You have to replace gear. You have to update your software. You have to buy plugins. There's all sorts of investment that's gone into it from the beginning. And all of those costs need to be made up at some point. So $250 per finished hour sounds like a lot. But if you want your audiobook to sell, you got to get professionals to do it because they have so much more knowledge and resources than just anyone who has written a book.
Great. Thank you. Now, this is the Writers of the Future podcast, so this is also dedicated to the aspiring writer and artist. So, and we're hitting 40 years right now, so I'm excited about that. That's going strong, and we're going for the next 40. But on, I guess we have the last few minutes here. I'll start with you, Craig. Any piece of advice that you would have to a writer, an author who wants to move forward into getting an audiobook that you would recommend as an author that either cautionary tale or a boon to your sales has happened, either way on that?
To help yourself write a better book, because you can always tell a great story, read it out loud. You can even record it, put it on YouTube or whatever. But for professional audio, I would say hire a narrator, hire a professional. And when it comes to editing, you can edit yourself. But once again, I would say hire a professional. We're our own worst judges when it comes to that kind of stuff. I hire cover artists because I don't have any graphic arts skills. You improve your chances of making a sale with this ancillary stuff that doesn't have anything to do with the original story. When you read it aloud, you're going to find areas that will tongue-tie you, and it'll tongue-tie a reader. Fix those and before you go live with it. And keep doing your best to put that story in the right reader's hands, which means you need to understand your genre. The biggest thing you can do is know the genre you're writing in. Genre equals marketing. And then put it out there. Put it out there to those readers. So then they are the ones who view it, and you're going to see your conversion rate improve where somebody gets to your product page and they're going to more likely buy your product, especially if they have options like audio CD, ebook, hardback, paperback. Those options are great. And if you look at traditionally published titles from the past, you might see six different formats, like a trade paperback as well as a large print paperback, all kinds of options for people for the way they consume their entertainment.
Great. And Jeff, your answer, I think, like in terms, now this is to the Writers of the Future, they're submitting stories, they're trying to move up in the ranks as an author. Anything, either cautionary tale or point of suggestion to be able to help them? What would be your professional tip on that?
You know, I guess just don't take audio for granted. I think that's the you know, I can't really speak to an author's journey as far as what they're writing, how to market their own stuff.
Aside when they hit your world,
when they hit my world, like when they're ready for audio, you know, just don't take it for granted. Don't think of it as just another step. Think of it as a step up. The next level of publishing, because what you're doing when you have an audio product is you're giving the people who like your product an opportunity for that audio to become almost like a soundtrack that they live with.
Right.
As Wolf was saying, people will do the things that they want to do with their hands and they don't have to read something. They'll go to their favorite audiobook and turn it back on, and it'll almost be like a mantra. It'll almost be like their background noise, and it just further endears them to your IP. Great. There's a lot of extra opportunity to get deeper under the skin of your readers by having an audio version that's fun to listen to, that enriches your characters, that endears your characters to the listener to the point where it's like almost like they've had conversations with your characters. I mean, think of a podcast that you listen to all the time. A lot of those podcasts, if you listen to them all the time, it's almost as if you know the person who's done the podcast because you've heard them talk so many times. You've heard them give their opinions on so many different things. You kind of get a sense of their character almost as if you've been having a conversation with that
right.
person. And that same thing applies to audiobooks.
Great, thanks. And one last point here, Craig, then.
I just wanted to ask Jeff, where could somebody browse Sound Booth Theater dramatizations?
Soundbooththeater.com. That's where most of our cinematic audio lives. You can find Monster Hunt NYC on Audible. You can find Everybody Loves Large Chests on Audible, which actually didn't start off as cinematic, but has become cinematic over time.
And I've downloaded your app too.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah. And we have our app. It's on both iOS and Android. Everything you can buy straight off the app, and you know, everything is a la carte. You want a product, you pay for it. And all of our first episodes of our cinematic stuff is available for free. So
good. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for listening. Subscribe to the Writers of Feature podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We've also been syndicated on the United Public Radio Network, where you can find these podcasts as well. Writers of the Feature series can be purchased wherever books are sold in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., Australia, and South Africa, and available everywhere via Amazon.com. We are especially appreciative of our sponsor, Carnation, for supporting this podcast. Carnation was introduced in 1899, and 2024 marked its 125th birthday. So Carnation has been making delicious milk products for 1 1/4 centuries and is still going strong. If that doesn't show consumer support, I don't know what does. Writers and Illustrators of the Future are contests created by Elwyn Hubbard to provide a means for the aspiring writer and artist to be seen and acknowledged for 4 decades. It is free to enter and open to amateur short story writers and artists of science fiction or fantasy. Again, thank you very much, Jeff and Craig, and thank you, listening audience.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks, John.